Peter B. Collins News and Comment. It is Friday, November 16, 2012. I'm getting out of here. This is my last News and Comment podcast for the next 2 weeks. I'll be returning on December 3rd. And I will be winging my way to the sunny island of Maui and spend 2 weeks there hanging out on the beach and catching up on happy hours. See if I can get a little happier. And while my daily News and Comment podcast will not be available, I will be bringing you, if you're a subscriber, some interviews that I recorded in the last few days, with one exception. We talked with Pepe Escobar. We debriefed him on his recent tour of the Western United States during the presidential election process. He had much to say also about the affair Petraeus and about Benghazi and about the new war in Gaza that we will get to directly here. Also, an upcoming podcast after Thanksgiving, Andy Worthington will update us on the state of affairs at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, and the mixed record of the Obama administration. Certainly, it hasn't been closed, the prison hasn't, but 71 people have been released in the last 4 years. And there are over 80 people who are listed as available to be released, but they're currently on hold. We'll discuss all that with Andy Worthington. And we're going to talk to Sam Banning in that same podcast. He is a filmmaker who produced a documentary about the Three Strikes Law here in California, which was, and I'm grateful for this, amended by a vote of the people on November 6th to reduce its most draconian elements. And also, before I return, our subscribers will hear a podcast with the celebrated documentary filmmaker Ken Burns. And his new film, which should be in theaters after Thanksgiving, is about the Central Park jogger case. And it's called the Central Park Five. Five innocent men who were boys at the time they were railroaded into prison, who were completely innocent of any involvement in the attack on that female jogger. The story is a powerful one, and Ken Burns and his daughter and son-in-law have produced this new documentary, and I highly recommend it to you if it shows up at a screen near you. Now to today's news and comment. There is a hot war underway between Israel and the Palestinians as Israel continues to pound the Gaza Strip. More than 500 air raids have been conducted in the last few days. And the Palestinians are responding by launching rockets. And they may have a handful of missiles, because we do have a report from Israel that some of those missiles have come close to hitting Tel Aviv. And the rockets that are ordinarily a part of the Hamas arsenal don't go that far. So I don't have complete information on that. But the real concern here is that Prime Minister Netanyahu, with an eye on his re-election coming up early next year, has decided instead of launching an attack on Iran, he will pound the Palestinians, presumably for domestic support. And this is just crazy. To launch a new hot war at a time when Israel is surrounded by conflict and instability. On the Egyptian side, there have been attacks in the Sinai Peninsula, and the government of Egypt is certainly still trying to find its proverbial sea legs. Then we look at Lebanon, which has been drawn into the civil war in Syria. Jordan, we'll talk about that in a moment, but it's on the border with Syria. Turkey is entering the fray in Syria. Israel itself has launched both tank and aerial assaults into Syria in the last week or 10 days. And to attack the Palestinians just is, you know, this sitting duck kind of target. Now, I know that some people listen very critically. They're always looking for even-handedness. I don't support violence from either side of the conflict. And it's fair to say that there are people in Gaza who have been launching attacks on Israelis. But the disproportionate nature of the power that Israel has and is willing to unleash, and the risks of widening conflicts in the region should cause Israel to show real restraint. And in our conversation that subscribers will hear next week with Pepe Escobar, you'll hear his commentary about these issues. And in particular, what has also been reported in the United States by Democracy Now!, and I credit Amy Goodman and her staff, is that, as we recounted yesterday, the initial assault here that broke the informal ceasefire killed the military commander of Hamas named Ahmed Jabari. And what we now know is that Jabari was assassinated just hours after he received the draft of a permanent truce agreement with Israel, which included mechanisms for maintaining that shaky ceasefire. He had been in contact with Israeli peace activist Gershon Baskin, who is the founder of the Israel-Palestine Center for Research and Information, and who had helped negotiate the deal between Israel and Hamas that resulted in the release of the Israeli soldier Gilad Shalit. And so Israel clearly targeted Jabari. They released aerial photographs showing his car, where it was, and then the shards that were left after they blew it up from the sky. And to attack at this time, when whether this was an officially sanctioned negotiation or not, there seemed to be some meaningful peace talks underway, underscores the contention in many quarters, including mine, that Benjamin Netanyahu does not want peace. Maintaining the conflict, continuing to expand the settlements, marginalizing and weakening the Palestinians by dividing and conquering them, by separating Hamas from Fatah, West Bank from Gaza. That is not a plan for peace. That is not a route forward to peace. And that is quite obvious. Meanwhile, in Jordan, thousands of young men poured into the streets of Jordan's cities and towns for the third night of protest against King Abdullah. And will he be able to hold on to power? The autocratic royal rulers in Bahrain have done so with support from the United States and from Saudi Arabia. Does Abdullah II have the same level of support from his neighbors? Well, these are open questions, and it just leads to more concern about stability in the region and the introduction of a new military conflict by Israel at this critical time. David Petraeus was on Capitol Hill today for closed-door hearings before the combined Senate and House Intelligence Committees. So far, I have not caught up with any leaks from that closed-door meeting, but the news accounts suggest that it was all about Benghazi. And as you know, I believe that Republicans have been reckless and opportunistic in targeting the Obama administration over Benghazi during the political campaign. But I've also suspected that the Obama team is covering something up. Pepe Escobar speculates that the CIA safe house, located not adjacent to but nearby the consulate compound, may have been the reason for the flat-footedness of the response and the claim from UN Ambassador Susan Rice that this was sparked by a spontaneous demonstration. And Escobar advances the story that apparently the CIA was holding some individuals, either Libyans or others, at this facility in Benghazi, and that may be what they're covering up. So I think that it's about time that we get to the bottom of this. And secret hearings don't help me. They don't help you understand what really occurred. And I don't want to see a commission and a long, drawn-out story Obama's been reelected. And I think that he should just let the chips fall where they may. And we still need an explanation about why Susan Rice was offering the spontaneous story long after it was clear that it simply wasn't true. A very unusual story on page A5 of Friday's New York Times. The subject of the story is the new president and CEO of the New York Times Company. His name is Mark Thompson. He's a Brit. And he moved into that job after running the BBC in London. The BBC is ripped apart by controversies over investigations into the late television host Jimmy Savile. Savile was accused of many events of sexual abuse, and it was tolerated and not exposed. He, of course, was never indicted, and he even made some references to getting away with it in a memoir. But what's really important here is that Joe Nocera, a columnist for the Times, was the first to be willing, in the Times' own pages, to question whether Mark Thompson is clean on the Savile case and whether he should be retained, I mean, he just started a week ago, as the CEO of the New York Times Company. And there are questions, legitimate questions, about what Mark Thompson knew, not only about the allegations against Jimmy Savile, but about a decision by his executives, by his underlings, to kill or to cancel a broadcast of a program called Newsnight that was going to report on the allegations against Jimmy Savile. And this occurred in September, as Mark Thompson was leaving his post at the BBC. So on his way out the door, 10 days before he left, he authorized the dispatch of a letter, presumably under his signature, which was a response to an article in the Times of London, the Sunday Times, regarding the Newsnight investigation that was not broadcast. And so here we have a man who there are doubts about his journalistic integrity, and he's been hired to run the New York Times, arguably the most important media outlet in the United States. And I have many problems with the Times, but it does do the best job of in-depth reporting. It's not generally critical enough of our government, particularly since 9/11. And it's certainly pro-corporate in so many respects. But in this news story, Matthew Purdy writes, "The timing and substance of the letter are significant because Thompson said in October that during my time as Director General of the BBC, I never heard any allegations or received any complaints about Jimmy Savile." Thompson has said he was not aware of the Newsnight program before it was killed in early it says December here, but I think that would have been September, and no evidence has emerged to challenge that. He acknowledges that a BBC reporter mentioned it to him a couple of weeks later at a company reception. And so we will have to dig in deeper here. But Mark Thompson continues apparently to have the confidence of the Sulzberger family that controls the New York Times. We'll see how long that lasts. The U.S. Postal Service has reported a $15.9 billion net loss for the fiscal year that ended September 30th. That is not really an operating loss. And Congress could fix this at any time, and they have refused to. The issue is that the only agency of the federal government that is required to pay in advance its retiree health care and pension obligations is the U.S. Postal Service, and that was imposed on them by an act of Congress a few years ago. And why they're doing this is beyond me. Because I believe the Postal Service is a valuable government agency. And its delivery services will not be the same if they're privatized and taken over by FedEx or UPS or a combination of the two. And yet, our legislators in the House and Senate seem determined to ignore this problem as the losses mount, which creates a pretext to close post offices, lay off workers, cut back Saturday delivery. And if those cuts are needed, I don't think any of those are sacrosanct. But this is a shell game, and it's time it came to an end. Now that gas prices have returned to a level below $4 a gallon at retail here in California, after spiking up to an average of $4.67, and yes, we saw many pumps sporting $5 and up per gallon prices in the month of October, the cost to California consumers in October alone was $320 million. It was stolen, just lifted right out of our bank accounts, our wallets, off our debit cards. There's no real explanation. State Senator Mark Leno held a hearing, but cannot really find any clear answers. There was a refinery fire in Richmond that closed the Chevron plant, but we have other refineries that produce California-grade gasoline. And the price gouging and downright extortion by the oil companies is something we really need to put a stop to. But I don't expect it anytime soon. Well, I will be back at you in early December. In advance, I wish you a great Thanksgiving. And I'll talk to you soon here at peterbcollins.com. Happy trails.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.